Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Giles Brown.
GB,
not GQ.
Looking at me, tell me, what do you see? Yes, I lost my mind.
That was the song that set pretty much most of the networks alight. Of course, Tattoo and all the things she said. And the reason I play that, no, I'm not having a midlife crisis and playing tracks featuring young Russian girls, but it is part of the story of my next guest. The book is called Rockin' the Kremlin, the incredible story of gangsters, oligarchs, pop stars in Putin's Russia. This is the man who basically bought modern music to Russia. I'm delighted to say that he joins me now live on. I'm not exactly sure where you are, David, but we're joined by the author of Rockin' at the Kremlin, David Junk. David, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm talking to you from sunny California, so it's early in the morning here, and it's wonderful to be in contact with Europe there in the late afternoon.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's good to have you with us. For those who don't know the dealings to do with Russia and the way that the Soviet Union crumbled, and because we always regarded, you know, the Soviet Union as the sort of people who would sort of, you'd go over there if you flew out of the Soviet Union with Levi's and Lucky Strike, and you'd sell them a couple of old Elton John LPs, and they were just starved of good music. And then suddenly, kapow, overnight, the Soviet Union crumbled. And those in the music business must have thought, hang on a second, we could really help some people out here. What was your role, David?
Oh, yes, yes. So when the Soviet Union collapsed, there was no music industry. There was no proper royalty accounting, songwriters' rights, none of that. And 90% of all the music was counterfeit. It was controlled by the Russian mafia and pirated in factories and inside of Russia. And so when the opportunity arose for record companies to move in, I was there. I was the first CEO of Universal Music, and it was just an avalanche of Western pop culture entering into the Russian world. And we had tremendous success with hip hop and rock and pop, and bringing Western artists to perform in Russia for the first time. And it was really a cultural bridge between former superpower enemies, America and Russia and the West. It was really a wonderful time and probably the absolute best times for Russia and the West after the end of the Cold War.
Because that was the thing, wasn't it? We thought that Russia would now embrace sort of, maybe naively, that, you know, they were opening McDonald's in Red Square and people were allowed to travel. Yeah. And this was part of the great new interchange. We saw, you know, Russians buying houses. I mean, I'm in southern Spain. An awful lot of Russian people bought houses down here as well. And we thought, okay, well, we're all going to be a big melting pot and get on. What was your did you have a knowledge of the Russian market? Because it seemed that apart from the counterfeit, the Russian bands were either really underground, i.e. some sort of metal, Russian metal stuff or rap, or they were kind of, you know, Soviet Union sanctioned.
Right. No, I didn't have any particular knowledge of Russian music when I went there. I got the job purely by chance, to be honest with you. It was the kind of situation where record companies, Western companies in general, that were moving into Russia were eagerly, desperately looking for Westerners with accounting experience, business experience. If you could speak Russian, that was huge. I couldn't really. I could a little bit when I first got there, and I eventually became fluent. But because, I essentially answered a help wanted ad. I answered a help wanted ad from the record company, and that's how I got the job. And so there was no particular knowledge of Russian music, but years and years of listening to American radio and really understanding what's a hit and what's not, that really helped me discover Russian bands in my job there as CEO of Universal. And so, you know, I was always looking for artists that could sell internationally. It was impossible to make money inside of Russia selling records. So I thought I would sign Russian artists that I could export to other countries around the world. And that's what really helped Universal in Russia.
Yeah, because I was going to think this is a period before the internet, obviously. And therefore, there's no distribution set up. There's no promoters. You can't say I'm bringing the Stones on tour. Which promoter do I speak to? I mean, it must have been that first day, presumably you were in Moscow or St. Petersburg or something like that. So presumably that first day must have been quite an eye-opener. And you must have thought, well, how are we going to do this then?
Such a challenge, though. Of course, everything was like that, though, not just music. I mean, every type of industry was like that. The transition from communism to capitalism was something everyone had to go through, including the music business. So it was a real, really great challenge. And it was a great opportunity to bring Western artists to Russia, because they were so hungry for more Western music. And so, although it was hard and working, fighting actually the Russian mafia was dangerous for sure, but the rewards of this job were just so incredible.
Because that is perhaps the thing, the Russian organized crime had the network that was up and running, and they took advantage, not just the music business, but every business, isn't it? And so you would presumably get visited by a small guy surrounded by several very large and frightening guys.
yes, and they were bad guys too. They used the money that they earned from selling counterfeit CDs and DVDs too. It was the film industry just as much as the music industry were totally controlled by the Russian mafia, and they were using the proceeds, the revenues from that, to fund terrorism and sex trafficking, drug trafficking. So a whole bunch of societal ills were being caused by this counterfeit CD program that the Russian mafia was behind. And I was asked by Universal to do something about it. That was part of my job, and that's what makes me a little different from the other record executives like Clive Davis and Jimmy Iovine that you've heard of. You know, they didn't have to go out on police raids of pirate factories and tangle with the Russian mafia like I did. That was the biggest difference.
But that's perhaps the thing, though, because at that point, there were police officers. I've spoken with FBI officers who were out there in Moscow fighting against, you know, organized crime. And at that point, there were people who, you know, police, law enforcement officers over there who wanted to put Russia on the right path. And for this period of time, it looked like, you know, the good guys were going to win. And that must have been the wonderful period for you when you're bringing acts over.
It was a tremendous period. It was a period of great hope, because really there was cooperation in every field, including law enforcement. You're right. There was tremendous cooperation between the Moscow police and the FBI regarding many things, including piracy. But it was fleeting, unfortunately, because of the corruption over there. The Russian mafia had real strong connections inside of the Russian military, so that eventually these pirate factories were being located on Russian military bases. And when I would show up with a police brigade, you know, trying to raid the pirate factory, because that's what we would do, is we would raid the factory and try to take them to court. We were stopped. We were stopped by the Russian military police on occasion. So it was so corrupt that it was impossible to think we would ever solve the problem there.
So when it comes to bringing over an act, because, you know, I've done a bit of concert promotion, and I always say it's crisis management and chaos theory at all times.
Yeah.
But yeah. So you know that everything that can go wrong, and it frequently does, and that's in, you know, that can be in Arizona. But bringing it over to the former Soviet Union, which is miles from anywhere, I mean, where are you going to get the kit from? Where are you going to, are the hotels going to be, you know, up to standard? Are you going to get the people doing the ticket security? And, you know, the rider, which is the thing that people, you know, artists ask for, are you going to be able to get, you know, to get those green M&Ms that the certain artists ask for?
You know, it was my job, though, to make sure everything went smoothly. And when an artist would come to Moscow, like, for example, Mariah Carey.
That's just mind-blowing in itself, because we're just talking about the green M&Ms. Mariah Carey's rider in Moscow must have been phenomenal.
Well, her entourage was bigger than the President of the United States. I'm not kidding, because he had visited earlier, and I saw more tractor trailers and 747s, and just, of course, Mariah travels with a choreographer and more stylist than the President of the United States does. That's obvious, but it was just when she came to Moscow, it was as if the Queen of England had come or something, and so that was a lot of pressure, because at the time Russia was really dangerous. There was a lot of car bombings, a lot of mafia street shootouts. There was a lot of artists were scared to come. In fact, one of my favorite artists growing up as a kid, Kiss, were supposed to perform a sold-out show, two sold-out shows in Russia, one in Moscow, one in St. Petersburg. And I was so excited to help promote that and escort them around the city and take them to Red Square. And they backed out. They backed out when the NATO started bombing Yugoslavia there. And that was during the Clinton administration. And they got scared. They thought Yugoslavia was next to Moscow. So they canceled the tour, and they never did perform there. But Mariah Carey was brave. She came, and she had a tremendous time there, and she did her walk on Red Square and performed in the Kremlin Palace, and so some artists were brave, some were not. That's basically the bottom line. But no one got hurt under my watch while they were visiting Russia.
And the thing is, when you do a live performance, you can do all the sort of video links you want. But and I talked to artists about this. I was talking to a couple of guys the other day, and it's a connection between you and the audience. You don't have to speak the same language, because music's a universal language. And even somebody who, you know, and I was born in 68, so grew up during, you know, the Reagan and Star Wars and all that sort of thing. And you must have looked out across Red Square or St. Petersburg and seen all these kids, all these people getting into Mariah Carey. And she must have looked out and gone, rather than I'm doing another convention center, this really means something. It must have had an emotional impact on both of them.
You know, when she sang, I don't know if you're a Mariah Carey fan, but when she sang Vision of Love,
that was her big one. Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah.
I had tears in my eyes. I know that sounds a little pathetic, but I was backstage with the crew, and I was watching her perform on stage, and I saw how Russians in the audience were reacting to her vocals, and they were so used to lip syncing and just not very good vocal performances from their pop stars. And here's one of the greatest singers on earth singing live and really powerful. And I could see that the Russians that night were listening and seeing a performer that they had never seen before in their lives. And it really made a big impact on them. And I loved watching that. I saw scenes like that all the time. When the Red Hot Chili Peppers came and performed on Red Square, it was when MTV officially opened in Russia. It was in 1999. There was hundreds of thousands of young Russians gathered there on Red Square. Red Square, where they, you know, there's a church, that's where Lenin is buried, Stalin is buried. I mean, not usually the site of a rock concert, right? Certainly not the Chili Peppers. And it was surreal to watch them sing "Give It Away, Give It Away, Give It Away Now" in front of hundreds of thousands of Russians on Red Square. I thought, wow, the West finally has come to Russia, and pop culture has conquered and won here tonight.
And not even the Chili Peppers, you brought Metallica to Russia. Now, Russians like their rock, don't they? I mean, they like to get a bit dark after a few, you know, in the dasher after a few thousand vodkas. So Metallica must have been an experience. So, you know, you must have looked out and gone, this is an interesting one.
What I'm even more proud of is we brought Metallica to Kyiv in Ukraine, and that was even a bigger show. Metallica performed at a big rock festival in Moscow, but in with a lot of artists. But in Ukraine, they were performing their first solo concert there in the stadiums, and it was incredible, the reaction. Russians and Ukrainians loved their heavy metal, and Metallica at the time, you know, they were the Unforgiven was out, the Enter Sandman. They had just so many massive hits that were on Russian radio, Ukrainian radio nonstop, and it was a great achievement to have that San Francisco band there in the middle of Eastern Europe.
You talk about Kyiv. And we'll come on to that in a minute. But the nuances, you began to realize being over there, the nuances between Georgians, Belarusians, Russians, I mean, the whole, you know, the Baltic states. It must have been, at that point, did you perhaps think maybe this is going to go a little bit wrong in the future? Or are we now looking back with hindsight? Because everybody's saying, oh, well, you could have seen this coming. But at the time, we really didn't, did we?
I'll be honest with you, I was naive. I hoped things were going to go well. But to be honest with you, I was told by folks in the Baltics, we will never trust the Russians. I was told by Ukrainians, we will never trust the Russians. I didn't really understand it at the time. This was 25 years ago, and peace was breaking out throughout Eastern Europe, and communism was buried, and Boris Yeltsin was the president, and things looked really great. But the Eastern Europeans, particularly the folks in the Baltics and the former Soviet republics like Georgia, they never ever trusted the Russians, and they were right. They were right to have been leery about it. And you know, one of the things about my job is I was also vice president of Eastern Europe for Universal Music, so I got to visit all of those countries and help build their music industries as well too. And I learned a lot about the relationships between Russia and those republics. And yet still, I had this great hope that, you know, the bridges we had built between Russia and America would last forever, and that democracy would ring free, and it would be a bright future for the world. But that all came crashing down 2 years ago.
I want to talk just quickly, because we'll come back to this, because obviously it's very important to me as well. But I want to talk about Tatu, because I played them coming in, and at the time, in the West, they were seen as basically a bit of scintillating sort of semi-lesbian pop. But to be LGBTQ artists at the point as they were at that time was an incredibly strong statement to make. And they are the most famous thing to come out of Russia.
They are. They're still the biggest selling music act in history from Russia. But they... I know they had a reputation as being titillating and a little bit sexy, but that in Russia, that was not the case. When I signed them to Universal, they were rebels. Their album cover even was them, their mugshots, their police mugshots. And they were a symbol of the new Russia. you know, loud and confident and cocky and provocative. And that's really what Tattoo were, is a modern day Sex Pistols, really. And their manager was like Malcolm McLaren in a lot of ways, you know, just looking for provocation. And so what's more provocative than taking on homosexuality in Russia? You know, homosexuality had been a crime during the Soviet Union, and it was still, there were still many laws on the books against propaganda, LGBTQ propaganda, when Tattoo's music was out and videos were on TV. So quite honestly, we were all risking going to jail with that project, because it couldn't happen today. That's for certain. But at the time, it was such a big thing, because it really was the first time a Russian artist had ever spoken about issues important to the gay community. And that was a real breakthrough in Russia. It was a real chance for folks that have been vulnerable to have equal rights with society. And it didn't last long, unfortunately, but that Tattoo was really a breakthrough for the LGBTQ community in Russia and the former Soviet Union as well, too, in Ukraine and Georgia and Belarus and then eventually Eastern Europe.
You know, and it went so far, and then it came snapping back, because, you know, after Yeltsin, and we thought this was going to be fun, and then Putin came in, and suddenly it all changed. I've interviewed rock stars, I've interviewed politicians, I've interviewed, you know, as listeners will know, my friend Pierre the Cameron was killed in Ukraine. I've spoken to his widow live on air. I've spoken to people who've fled Putin, and they all say, dissidents, and they all say it could have been so good, and yet here we are. And even Tattoo, I mean, I've heard some things about some of the singers in Tattoo. One of the singers, you know, now is pushing the line, the whole situation, which must be very sad for you. When did you decide to get out of, at least of Russia, and when did the connection with Ukraine begin?
Well, I always was connected with Ukraine, even before I lived in Russia. I was studying in Leningrad at the time, and I took a train back to Europe, and it went through Ukraine, and that was the first time I was able to see what a beautiful country that is. And I'm from a farm in America, in Ohio, and so I really related to the agricultural background of Ukraine. Those golden wheat fields really, you know, just I related to that very much, and I always wanted to come back. And so when I was a Universal music executive, I came back and helped start the very first Universal record office there in Kyiv way back in 1999. And I've always loved that country and always rooted for it. And yes, it's been a tragedy watching a lot of the artists that I promoted in Russia remain quiet. There's some artists even that are supporting the war, which is just a total tragedy for me. It's impossible to grasp, but Ukraine will have a tremendous music industry someday. When this war is over, you will see some of the most talented artists in the world coming from Ukraine. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
So when did you sort of leave Russia, and how did you end up so you went sort of Russia, Ukraine to California, or when did you decide? Because presumably there's no business, there's nothing coming out of Russia now.
Well, no, you're right. The Universal's pulled out. Gibson guitars have pulled out. All the record companies, Spotify have stopped, and that's a good thing. I'm really supportive of Western companies boycotting Russia. I think it's important. I left Russia twice. I left Russia in 2005 to come back to the U.S. and then I returned to Russia in 2013 to open a Gibson guitars showroom, the very first one there in Moscow. and I stayed there for a couple of years, but that's when the Russians invaded Crimea in 2014. And I knew it was the beginning of the end then. And I lost a lot of friends in Russia during that time. I was really shocked at how, you know, a lot of my Russian colleagues were supportive of the Russian army taking Crimea away. and they were excited about it. I couldn't understand that because, you know, I had been working in both countries all those years, and I just really thought there was this bridge, this friendship, you know, this brotherhood between the countries, and I was completely wrong. I was completely wrong about that, for sure. And so I left in 2015 for the second time and came back to New York and worked for Gibson there. But some of the artists that I had supported in Russia were for Gibson, that I was giving them guitars. They were actually speaking out against the war, and I was so proud of that. And I was proud that I supported some of those artists who were brave enough to speak against the war back then. Now it's impossible. Any artist who speaks out now is immediately blacklisted, if not worse. You know, there's even arrest warrants out for some of the rap artists that have been speaking out. So it was something very important to me to support those artists, but I do understand that they are in danger for their lives too as well.
So when it comes to writing Rocking the Kremlin, is it to provide a snapshot, a record of a period of time that hopefully we won't forget about, and hopefully we'll come back again, because otherwise it just goes Soviet Union, Yeltsin drunk on stage, Putin, and, you know, the authoritarian rule, yeah?
There's two purposes, honestly. One, I did want to talk about the fact that after the Cold War ended, America and the West did support Russia. We did help them transition from communism to capitalism. You know, there were folks working in finance, some in oil, gas. I worked in the music industry. That was my thing. But we all were there in from the West in Russia, living there, helping them leave the ashes of communism behind. And a lot of folks are forgetting about that and trying to blame NATO for this invasion of Ukraine and trying to say that we've been provoking Russia all these years. Not true. And my career is living proof of it. But the main thing I wanted to write this book for is that the message I wanted to get out is that there's still hope for the future. You know, one of the things that I worked hard on when I was with Universal is bringing hip hop music to Russia. And we brought Eminem, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Tupac, Jay-Z, and all these artists. They were extremely popular, and a local Russian hip hop community developed, which is really fantastic. That's what hip hop does. It always starts with big stars, and then the local rappers start forming their own community, and next thing you know, local hip hop is as popular, if not more popular, than American hip hop. And that's what's going on in Russia today. It's still to this day the most popular music genre, but it's also, in my belief, the future of Russia, because young people are eventually going to rise up and take back their country from the Kremlin, I think. And I think hip-hop is the most dangerous music for Putin right now, because nothing can unite youth quicker in an anti-authority message than hip-hop.
I am just waiting for the Russian language version of Terminator D and Public Enemy. That would be something to behold.
I know, but they have their own not direct translations, but they write about these things in Russia. They feel these same issues there, and they're brave to do it. You know, I mean, one thing about Chuck D, he was never labeled a foreign agent, or there was never an arrest warrant out for him, right? But that's what happens in Russia with hip hoppers. But they're putting their money where their mouth is, and their life on the line with their lyrics, and that's what hip hop is. Authenticity. So that's why I believe that's the future of Russia will be young people embracing more hip hop music.
If there was one moment where you had to, you know, Hunter S. Thompson would call it the high water mark, where you just looked around and went, I can't drink any more vodka. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. You know, Maria Carey's gone missing. Is there a moment that you look back at that and just go, hey, life, hey?
Yeah, you know, in around 2005, there was a series of terrorist attacks in Moscow and around the country that really got to me. In fact, Putin was just visiting the town of Beslan, where one of the worst
terrorist attacks. Yeah, the school thing.
It was awful. It was awful. And what made it extra awful was that the Russian security forces constantly were fumbling. They were the Keystone Cops. They never could save hostages. They would just kill everybody. They would, you know, they would bring RPGs and tanks to a hostage rescue situation. They just were very bad at this. And it scared me because I had a family there. I had two boys and my wife, and I started to become worried for their safety. You know, I never was afraid of the Russian mafia or oligarchs or even the Kremlin, but it was the terrorism and it was Russia's inability to do anything about it that really got to me. And that's why I left Russia in 2005 the first time.
The book is called Rocking the Kremlin, My Incredible True Story of Gangsters, Oligarchs and Pop Stars in Putin's Russia. It's by David Junk, who is speaking today, and Fred Bronson. David, if people want to find you online, where's the best place to track you down in the nicest possible way?
So rockin-the-kremlin is our website. You can check out some great videos there. I've got some tattoo videos up there as well, too, including the one when they performed at the MTV Movie Awards in Los Angeles. That was probably one of their most high-profile performances. And I've got some behind-the-scenes videos of me talking to the police about piracy and things like that. So there's all kinds of fun things. We've got a Spotify track list on our website, too, because this book is so musical. There's just so much music from all over the world and so much European music and American music, but also, of course, a lot of Russian music. And so that's the best place to find me, rockin-the-kremlin.
And you'll be able to download the book, or you'll order the book, excuse me, from our own virtual bookstore. The book is called Rocking the Kremlin. It's by David Junk. David, thank you so much for getting up early to speak to us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was real fun talking with you this morning.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.